life. It was terrible. I remember my father's best friend, Ollie Harrington, who was a member of the CPUSA and the creator of BOOTSY.
The Communist Party USA.
Yes, yes, yes. And he was the creator of BOOTSY, a very famous cartoon. And he was my father's best friend to the end. My father used to tell Ollie, the apartment is bugged. It's bugged. And Ollie used to laugh at my father. This was in Paris at the end.
Julia, we just have 20 seconds.
And Ollie would laugh and say, no, no way. You're being paranoid, Richard. But Richard insisted, so Ollie brought technicians in, and they found bugs.
Well, so, we're going to we have to leave it there. But people can pick up this latest book of the great literary giant Richard Wright. Thank you so much to his daughter, Julia Wright, The Man Who Lived Underground, just published. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closures of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Program Advisory Committee meets on the second Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Hi, my name is Will Selzer. I help prepare musical programs here at KBOO, folk, country, and jazz. I think one big way that the station supports the Portland area is by providing commercial-free musical entertainment of every imaginable variety. And it's all prepared and presented by volunteers from your community. It's good for us volunteers, and it's good for you.
Knowing that your door is always open.
We all need to support the station to keep the music flowing. If you like listening to music on KBOO, thank you. And please continue your support of this wonderful full-service community radio station. Go to kboo.fm/give to become a member or just to help keep the station going strong. Thanks.
For years and years I rambled. I drank my wine and gambled.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 8:01. Coming up is The Gap. Meanwhile, as the folks were saying before, you can do your part. Chip in with what you can. And if you can't, that's fine too. For those who can, go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. And with that implied countdown, it's time for The Gap. Mind the gap, because we gon' bridge it. Stand by, stay tuned.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is The Gap. Thank you so much for tuning in. I am Tammy. On the line with me is Althea. Hello, Althea. How are you?
I'm doing good. The intro song is always the shot of energy that I need at a beautiful 8 a.m. hour on a Friday. I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. And then also, of course, connecting us from our homes to you is the one and only Sonia. Thank you so much, Sonia. Hope all is well with you. We have a really special guest today for our first part, and we're going to be talking about some really interesting workshops that are happening, brought to you from Apano. And on the line with us is B. Ye Adgen, who is Apano's event and community space manager, and she'll be talking with us about their upcoming liberation workshops that they have prepared. E, how are you? Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. Good morning.
This is fantastic. We're super thrilled to have you. Also, because, you know, this is the first Friday of this special month, which is, of course, Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month. And so Apano is working on these workshops that you actually created. But before we get into that, can you start off with just giving us a little bit of background about Apano? I'm sure that listeners are familiar, but just a little bit of history on the organization and what you do there.
Absolutely. Apano is the Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon. We're a C3, so we're a community-based organization, and we're a C4, which means we're a political advocacy organization. Our mission is to unite Asian and Pacific Islanders to build power, develop leaders, and advance equity through organizing, advocacy, community development, and cultural work. We envision a just world where Asian and Pacific Islanders and communities who share our aspirations and struggles have the power, the resources, and voice to determine our own futures, and where we work in solidarity to drive political, social, economic, and cultural change. Apano started as a small organization back in the 90s and has evolved into what it is today. It's a medium-sized organization that works in lots of different fields. Political advocacy, community development. We have a community space on Southeast Division and 82nd. We do work in schools. We do lots of different work throughout the community, but always coming back to this idea of developing leaders and advancing equity and uplifting not just Asian and Pacific Islander communities, but communities of color throughout the Pacific Northwest, throughout Oregon, and throughout Portland.
That's awesome. That's really great. That I wanted to touch on that little point that you just mentioned. When we spoke earlier yesterday, you mentioned that this year there's going to be a focus more on solidarity between, you know, folks of color, indigenous people, black folks. And will you speak a little bit on why that's important, especially during this time?
Absolutely. So Apano has crafted for the month of May a series of workshops called Liberation in Practice. These are anti-racism workshops for API, which stands for Asian and Pacific Islander Heritage Month, for the month of May 2021. It's a total of 9 workshops that all take a progressively more deep look and examination at anti-racism work, how to gain more anti-racism skills and tools for what we call our social justice toolkits, and how to actually practice co-liberation in the real everyday world, because it's not a destination, and it's certainly not a perfect path, but it's one that we all have to walk, and that one that we have to walk together. So in terms of solidarity, in past years, Asian Pacific Islander Heritage Month could often include like galas and celebrations, just looking at the Asian community or just looking at the Asian and Pacific Islander community, even though there's a real need to disaggregate those terms, which we probably don't have time to get into right now, but I did want to mention it. But what we thought would be even more valuable for communities of color and more valuable for our Asian and Pacific Islander communities is to offer this series of workshops where we can kind of dive into the deep end together to learn about and practice co-liberation and to learn about and, you know, experience what it is to try to do anti-racism work together in community, which is why we crafted these workshops.
And you started these, can you talk a little, before we get into what these workshops actually look like and talking about some of them, can you just do a little quick rundown of the Resilience series that started last year, and then kind of how it developed to the liberation workshops this year, and also your choice in even phrasing them like that. I know there's a lot of care and a lot of intention that went into choosing those words. So can you describe the progression from last year to this year, and also your choice behind it from going from resilience to liberation?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, resilience is intertwined with everything that really we talk about and we do right now, particularly because of the political climate that we just came out of and that we're still currently in many ways. And of course, with the reality of the pandemic and COVID-19. So back in April of 2020, my colleagues and I came together and recognized that there was a lot going on. You know, there's a stay-at-home orders, the impending reality of COVID, which back in April and May of 2020, I don't know if we were all fully aware of yet. But what we realized was that folks of color in Portland, in the Pacific Northwest, and even beyond, needed a place to come together online that was safe, that they could access from their homes, and be in a brave affinity space for BIPOC community and by BIPOC community. So we developed the Resilience series, which is a bi-monthly public program that is a participatory BIPOC-only space. We realized that being really consistent with how folks could access opportunities to connect while social distancing was hugely important. Furthermore, we wanted to create opportunities for community members to contribute to a mutual aid network, whether that be resources on housing, resources on food, on medicine, or even just the mutual aid of being able to share stories and being vulnerable together was incredibly valuable and still is incredibly valuable. So the Resilience series has, I keep losing track. I think we're at 25 maybe at this point. We have quite a few under our belts at this point. And we've been really honored to look at a huge variety of topics throughout the whole year plus now. So we started out looking at community resilience. What does it look like to create a mutual aid network? What does it feel like? And we also looked at things like community safety resilience, transformative justice, COVID-19 vaccine resilience. We had some really great ones like the resilience of play, which looked at the importance of tabletop gaming during COVID and the stay-at-home orders. The resilience of spirit, how to bring a holistic spiritual practice into your life, particularly during these uncertain times. The resilience of rest, what is the opposite of grind culture? What can we learn about going slower and taking more care for ourselves and each other? These are just a few examples. We also had the great pleasure to partner with orgs like Critical Resistance, and we looked at resilience and healing through abolitionist practice. So that was a conversation around the abolition of the prison industrial complex and how that can actually lead to healing justice for communities of color. The Resilience series always comes back to this question of what is the holistic equitable and just world that you really want to live in? What does that feel like? What does that look like? What does that smell like? What does that taste like? It's this invitation to radically dream and to radically imagine together, collaboratively, the world that we want to bring into reality. And the reality of that dreaming is that there are a lot of systemic, structural, oppressive systems like white supremacy, like the prison industrial complex, that need to be abolished and that need to be deconstructed for people to actually be able to be safe, to be healthy, to be happy, and to be with each other in that just, equitable, and holistic world that you actually want to live in.
So yeah, liberation, thank you for that,
BA. Practice,
please. No, I was going to cut you off, but if you got more, I want to hear it.
I was just going to say that Liberation in Practice is a resilience series deep dive. So a lot of the, you know, being that it is a BIPOC-only, brave and safe space, a public program that's created by and for communities of color, we often talk about our shared and intersecting and complex experiences of trauma, of oppression, and then what we're doing to change that, to fight that, and to heal that. So Liberation in Practice was essentially an invitation to dive deeper in the same sort of format, in the same sort of care and compassionate holding of these topics and of these realities for, again, BIPOC community, so that we could essentially see that path, that practice together, and be on that path together, and then to learn together and to, again, create those opportunities to develop more social justice tools for our social justice toolkit, as I had mentioned earlier.
And what are the, so the, there was one session of the Liberation in Practice series that happened this past Wednesday, but there's more coming up this month. Can you talk us through what those sessions are focused around?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we crafted Liberation in Practice, we asked the question, where should we start? You know, at the very, very beginning, if we think of it as a path or a practice, what's the first entry point? So our first session on the 5th, which was just a couple days ago now, was around understanding history and social locations. It was understanding what is race, which we kind of take for a static, you know, kind of concrete term, but really if you start to unpack it and look at it historically, the idea of race, the term of race, has changed over time. It changes depending on who is using it as a tool and as a weapon, and when they are doing this, you know, when they are acting. And again, what is racism? How does race, this thing that, you know, has been considered static but is actually very fluid, how does that get turned into this weapon and this tool that holds people down and unjustly and for no, you know, no measurable reason lifts others up? So we started to unpack that and get into that history. And then we explored ways that we, even as communities of color, embody racism and that we experience it. I just want to check. I'm hearing a lot of echoing. Do you need me to adjust my headphones or anything?
Oh, you are good on this end.
Okay, great. Cool. I'll just ignore the weird echo that I hear. Sorry to interrupt myself. So as the events continue through the month of May, we dive deeper and deeper into this, into these questions around, you know, how do we become better anti-racists? How do we practice anti-racism and co-liberation together? So some of our upcoming events, this next Wednesday is called Radical Self-Awareness. We're unpacking and trying to understand the model minority myth, how it has been weaponized, and then how we as Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders can co-create with other communities of color a model minority mutiny. What can we learn from our histories? what can we learn from practices today that subvert and deconstruct that weaponization, that assigned positionality, so that we can actually bring liberation and co-liberation into, bring it into life. The Friday following is the event that I'd love to really invite all of our listeners to. It's celebrating Asian and Pacific Islander resilience and solidarity. It's on Friday, the 14th of May, from noon to 1:30. This is the space where we're inviting all of our white allies and accomplices to come and celebrate resilience and solidarity with us. We have an amazing panel of speakers, including Asian and Pacific Islander speakers, including elected officials and professors that we work with. And there's going to be a really robust conversation around what does this look like right now? What does this look like in the past? And what can we all do together to continue the work of co-liberation and continue the work of anti-racism? Some other events that are happening that I recommend for communities of color include on the 18th of May with presenter Kim Tron, Unlearning Anti-Blackness in Non-Black Communities. This is gonna be a really great interactive gathering where folks are not gonna be shy and are gonna dive deep into unpacking their own anti-Blackness, anti-Blackness that they experience in society, in family, in community, how to change it, and then how to be an active agent to help others unlearn anti-Blackness. Because at the core of racism in this country is an economy of anti-Blackness. And I could get into that, but I don't know if we have time. Some other events I'd love to highlight as well. On the 19th, we've partnered with Asians for Black Lives, PDX Asians for Black Lives, and we're going to be looking again at anti-Blackness and relational social power. Folks from that organization, or from that collective, I should say, will be sharing stories and experiences on how they do this internally within their org and within their worlds. Another event I'd love to highlight is Revolutions and Revelations. Again, these last three events that I mentioned are for and by BIPOC community. The one on May 26th, Revolutions and Revelations, is all about racial healing. Something that I noticed in my time of taking a lot of anti-racism trainings, diversity, equity, inclusion workshops and summits, is that there's often a lot of focus on the problem, which a lot of communities of color and individuals of color know from lived experience. And there's not often a focus on the solution or what comes next, what we can aspire to evolve into. You know, we talk a lot about what we want to leave behind, but it's kind of nice to see where you're moving towards. So Revolutions and Revelations is all about racial healing. It's all about radical tenderness. It's all about ways that we can create more opportunities to share stories, to be vulnerable with each other, to be real with each other, to feel a heart-to-heart connection, and to feel that experience of, you know, being in family with each other, which will help us build and see this world that we actually want to live in, this holistic, just, and equitable world that we actually want to live in. So that one's on May 26th, and it goes from 5 to 7 p.m. The last event that we're hosting on May 28th is particularly important because May, besides being Asian and Pacific Islander Heritage Month, is also Mental Health Awareness Month. Asian and Pacific Islander communities in the United States are the least likely community to pursue mental health care. And we are one of the most underfunded federally communities in the United States to receive assistance with mental health care and with a lot of other medical situations. This is intimately tied to the model minority myth. I don't have time to get into all of it now, but on the 28th, which is a Friday, the last Friday of the month, we're offering healing and care for Asian and Pacific Islander communities, where we're gonna ask questions around, you know, what are the resources that we have? Why are our communities not accessing mental health care? What does that mean about mental health care as an institution, as a cultural reality? And then how can we change that? And how can we hold space for ourselves and each other to grieve and to heal? And it's imperfect, right? It's messy, but it's beautiful and it's necessary. And when we get to do it together, and when we get to have those conversations together, and again, as I said earlier, that radical vulnerability, that radical tenderness, it begins to feel a little lighter. It begins to feel like there's a little bit more room to breathe, a little bit more room to just be your whole, imperfect, beautiful self, and to be appreciated for that. So we're dedicating an entire 2 hours to just looking at that. Why is mental health care so important? How can we access our resources? And besides the resources outside of ourselves, how can we hold space for ourselves and for each other to grieve and heal? If folks want to learn more, I recommend you go to Apano/liberation in practice, all one word. That'll bring you to our landing page where you'll see the entire schedule of events. There's also a resource page. We've created a wayfinding workbook, which gives people prompts and different opportunities to make notes and to really craft that tool for their anti-racism toolkit. And there's a lot of great information there as well. Speaker bios, information about each of the sessions.
That's awesome. Thank you. That's really awesome. And before we let you go, because I know you are very, very busy. I mean, you know, this isn't easy stuff. And the radical tenderness is really something. It feels really good to just hear that that is a thing that people are trying to you know, talk about and normalize and spread around, and especially in the Black and Indigenous and, you know, POC space. And that actually leads me to my question. Why did you decide to make these spaces specifically for Black, Indigenous, and people of color? Of course, there's the May 14th event that is for white allies and accomplices, which, you know, we'll have all that information on the webpage show notes. But why are all these workshops geared specifically and only towards Black, Indigenous, and folks of color?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really great question. So the first thing I'll say is that for folks who live in the Pacific Northwest, for folks who live in Portland, for folks of color, we are made aware every single day that this is a very, very white dominant space. A lot of the spaces that many of us inhabit, whether it's in schools or at work, are also often white dominant spaces because we live in a white dominant culture, which is white supremacy. Dominant culture is white supremacy. So a lot of anti-racism workshops and a lot of anti-racism work is often formulated for those with the greater amount of social power, so for white folks, which is important. And I'm not going to say do not engage in anti-racism work. I ask all colleagues of, you know, all shapes and sizes and creeds and everything to do anti-racism work, to get into it, to get messy, to get vulnerable. But one thing that we identified and that I really felt and saw that's important is that when it's a brave and safer space for communities of color, there's an affinity that can be created in the experience for people so that they can feel safe to share their lived experiences. The thing also about white supremacy and racism is that even if you are a person of color, you have embodied it and you have unfortunately taken it inside of yourself too, because we've all been subject to this dominant culture. So we formulated the Resilience Series and Liberation in Practice as these brave and safe spaces for communities, for individuals in the community to be able to safely share their lived experiences, share their vulnerabilities, and for once, maybe in a month, maybe once in 2 weeks, be in a space that is not white dominant, that is there to uplift and celebrate and cherish them at whatever level racism education they're entering with. Everybody has lived experience and everybody has stories. And those are some of the best moments of learning. The last thing I'll say is that Liberation in Practice, just like the Resilience series, is participatory. So every session includes 1 to 2 lectures by a great speaker. Maybe it's an academic from a local college. Maybe it's organizers from a local grassroots community organization. But there's always opportunities for a community to break into small breakout rooms, to discuss what they've just heard about, to share their stories, to get into it with each other, and to support each other. And it's a really beautiful thing to see the conversations that come out of those spaces. Really, people are always like, oh, I wish there was more time in the breakout rooms. I don't want to leave, you know? And that's the most wonderful feedback you could ever hear as a producer, that people just want to stay and they just want to keep engaging. There's nothing better than that.
Definitely, yeah, especially during our, you know, since we're all doing things remotely, to people that want to stay there, even though it's, you know, they're not physically there, it's very special. I think a lot of us are dealing with Zoom fatigue and stuff, so it's pretty great that people are engaged. And, you know, we're hoping, you know, that once we have the pandemic behind us and people are safely, you know, getting back into physical locations, are you hoping to bring this back to a physical location once is it possible? Is that something that you're aiming for, or is that just still too many unknown variables for you?
Well, actually, when we started out doing the Resilience series, one of the values that I really, you know, tried to uphold is that we will resiliently outlive the pandemic, and we will survive the pandemic, and then someday we will come together in person at the Orchards of 82nd Community Space and have a community celebration where all of our attendees, all of our community speakers, everybody who's participated in making this a reality can come together to share food, to share art, to share music, to share poetry, to come together to radically dream our world into reality that works for everybody. A world that has abolished and deconstructed systems of oppression, even if we're not fully there yet, we'll feel it a little bit more because we can see it in each other and see it in each other's smiles. And so that's one of our goals, is to have this big community celebration and to, you know, to really embrace and embody that idea of resilience. And honestly, resilience has been completely commercialized, and I could talk all about how it's also problematic, but there is a beauty in this idea of us being able to safely come together again in community to share food, to share stories, to share realness, to share presence, to share vulnerability. And hopefully the Resilience series will continue on even after that and become an in-person monthly gathering at the community space at Orchards of 82nd, where again, we will continue to hear from wonderful community speakers. We'll continue to break out into small groups, but in person, where we can share stories. We can share our insecurities. We can share things that we want to learn about. And most importantly, we can share resources and we can share knowledge. That's the vision, the long-term vision for Resilience Series.
That sounds great, and hope, and it'll happen sooner than later. And we, like you said, we'll survive through this. Again, for listeners who are interested, could you just go over the website where they can get more information? And of course, we'll have these links in our show notes as well online.
Yeah, the website for folks to check out is Apano, so APANO.org/liberation-in-practice.
Awesome. Thank you so much. This is B.A. Odgen from the Apano Event and Community Space Manager talking with us about all of these upcoming series that are, they sound so amazing. And of course, there is the May 14th event, which is open to allies, white allies and accomplices. And it is all online for right now, and we'll have all that information on the webpage at kboo.fm/thegap. See, before I let you go, is there any final thoughts that you'd like to share with us?
I guess the last thing I would love to share is just to ask folks to really consider every day the question, what is the holistic, just, and equitable world that you actually want to live in? What does it look like? What does it feel like? What does it smell like? What does it taste like? And how can you take the steps today? Maybe they're small. Maybe it's a conversation with a neighbor. Maybe it's planting a garden. Maybe it's, you know, checking in on an elderly neighbor. How can you do those little acts, those little steps in the past, starting today and then every day, that helps bring that world to life? Because we all need to be working on it, and we all need to be radically dreaming and radically envisioning together. And then collaboratively, we can do it, we can make it. So I invite everybody, that's not a question just for one community or another, that's a question for all communities, for all living beings, for all humans on this planet. And how do you do that today? How do you make that real?
Thank you so much, leaving us with a real question that, you know, what does it feel like? What does it taste like? You know, never, I don't know if people truly think about this. I don't know if they know that liberation can have a smell or a taste, but we, you know, we can and we will. Thank you so much, B. Yay, Ogden, again, from the Apano Event and Community Space Manager. Thank you so much for your time and sharing all of this great knowledge with us. And hopefully we'll be able to have some more conversations around this workshop on KBOO, just to you know, get people a little bit of more information on Apano and, you know, what liberation and co-liberation looks like here in our communities. Thank you so much. Really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day, everyone.
You take care.
Thanks.
We will be back in just about a minute and a half with our community question. You are listening to The Gap here on KBOO Portland. We'll be back in just about in a couple of moments. Enjoy this musical break. KBOO Portland. This is The Gap, and we are back. You're just listening to a fantastic little number by personal favorite John Fahey with the song Sligo River Blue. And we are back doing our community question. But before we do that, Althea, I think, has something that she'd like to say to us.
Boy, really build it up for me. I just wanted to mention a quick little mention that KBOO is currently in our spring membership drive. The theme is growing the grassroots, which is something that we strive to do here on The Gap. And all of the wonderful programs on this community station are working toward. And it is the support of our community that enables us to keep going, to stay on the air, to continue to bring on great guests, to bring in new music, and to train people, give them the gift of radio. All of that is through support from our community. And if you're interested in supporting us in this fun spring membership drive time, you can go to kbu.fm/give or text KBOO to the phone number 44321. And we would, you know, really appreciate that support. Keeping the lights on, keeping the, I don't know, the radio flowing was what I was going to say, but I don't know if that quite encapsulates it. But yes,
the radio magic.
The radio, yeah, radio magic.
Not cheap. Magic isn't cheap.
It's definitely not cheap. But yeah, all of your support is greatly appreciated. kbu.fm/give.
Thank you. Thank you, Althea. And per usual, we like to, at this section of the, this time of the show, we'd like to extend a community question that is, our community question. What are some new terms that you've learned that perfectly describe the phenomenon that you've noticed but haven't had the word for yet? Now, in case you're saying, what does that quite mean? I'm giving you a couple of examples. Words like simp, girl boss, Karen, boomer. I can keep going. Althea, do you have any words that come to mind?
Well, there's a lot. Yeah, I mean, Tammy and I are thinking about, like, slang terms, or, I mean, even academic terms that have become more popular or become, you know, more common in the lexicon, if you will. Language is always changing. But there's new words to describe, old phenomenon. And if you have a thought about, you know, a new word or a new term or phrase, turn of phrase even, that describes something that you felt before but didn't know how to say, give us a call, 503-231-8187. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah. And these words, it's a lot of words also make comebacks, you know.
Mm-hmm.
One word that I noticed, I wouldn't hear a lot, but then I started hearing more and more, especially like younger people say, cringe or cringy, where, you know, mm-hmm. it's been around, but it hasn't had the, I guess, cultural momentum behind it. Another one that is not too recent, but pretty recent, it's catfishing. A lot of these words, which I guess, you know, listeners may notice that a lot of these words, were generated on the internet or became popular and gained traction through the internet. And of course, as we know, whatever happens as above, so below, whatever happens online is going to trickle into real life. Woke also is another word that comes to mind. Receipts, when you have them, receipts, you're going to prove something. Althea's favorite is a himbo.
that one has taken on new meaning. I got to describe for people because, you know, this is a something that I had to look up. Himbo, as in the masculine form of the bimbo, was a term that was used to kind of describe like 90s surfer dude aesthetic. Taken on a new meaning on the internet, folks. And people are very, you know, intrigued in this idea of a physically fit, not incredibly smart, and therefore non-threatening masculine presence. Sonia, you want to chime in here?
Oh yeah, I've got a few. They're mostly neologisms generated by the Savage Love audience. This is the article advice column by Dan Savage. We have Santorum and lifting luggage.
Now,
well, I'm not sure how broadcastable the definition of Santorum is, so I'm going to play it safe and just invite folks to search it.
Fair enough.
Lifting luggage is when you're hiring sex workers on the sly and pretending that their assistance for doing something non-sexual, like carrying your luggage for you.
Interesting. Yeah, bellhops. Shout out to all the bellhops out there.
It's interesting how these words, I think personally one of my, I think not favorite, but the most interesting one, oh, excuse me, I put the phone number again for listeners, 503-231-8187. We'd love to get your input. Again, the question is, what are some terms strictly describe the phenomenon that you've noticed but didn't have the word for beforehand? Me personally, I gotta say, Karen is one that, I mean, it's not like, you know, it's something I don't have strong feelings one way or another, but when that word kind of came into the collective consciousness, and it, yeah, I mean, it's the way that the internet described it, from the haircut to the whole I want to talk to the manager thing, but then on top of it, when people, older people, especially like older white folks, started embracing that word, it was really nice to understand that, like, oh, we all kind of suffer from this type of person. It's not just, and it was almost like a moment of solidarity between all of us, you know? And so that was an interesting word that it struck a chord with me in a very soft way. But again, the phone number for listeners to share with us their thoughts about this, 503-231-8187.
Tammy, I think what you might have been experiencing there was you might have been seeing how a phenomenon I've seen around that I've seen among men criticizing misogynist behavior of other men is mostly to distance themselves from it. It's kind of like a backhanded way of saying not all men, right? Like saying, like, it's aren't those guys just so awful? With the subtext being, but I'm not, right? I'm cool, right? And so, we see with older white people trying to distance themselves from the phenomenon of the Karen, which is a white woman weaponizing her white privilege to subjugate people of color. And I see it weaponized against women who speak up and who don't let misogynists stomp all over them.
Yeah, it's not to say that they're all good, I suppose. But I think maybe the idea of the Karen is that it's, you know, the step towards, instead of saying, well, okay, maybe that's true, but I'm not one of them, to be, well, I see that this is a larger phenomenon that I can't fully distance myself from.
Another interesting one that you brought up to me, Althea, was Girl Boss, which is now also starting to catch some flack because of, it's pink washing, you know, capitalism. So that was also a cool one. I don't know if you have
Girl Boss cracks me up. I think that one's really funny. Which is, again, to be clear here, isn't a criticism of women owning their own business or, you know, succeeding, but it's more a critique of the sort of, I mean, BA actually brought it up, of like grind culture, hustle culture, of like, I'm like, and also, you know, pyramid schemes a little bit too. Like, don't you want to be here? I'm a girl boss and I work from home and I, you know, sell lip gloss or leggings and you can too. You know, it's just a different, just not, you know, what is it? Cutco knives. I went down a whole rabbit hole about various multi-level marketing schemes. But that sort of like ethos of the girl boss, which sort of like takes the trappings of, you know, like a girl power idea, but then, you know, abuses them for different reasons. Some of the other terms that I thought of that, like, when it's, because it's just like when you hear the word for it, it's just, you know, it strikes a chord. You're like, oh, I have, that explains something that's happened to me that I couldn't express adequately before. And one of those is the word mansplain. And look, I know that people don't love, you know, I'm not here to critique or to get into manspreading or anything like that. But like, I have totally had the experience, especially in college, a guy explaining something to me that I already know, that it would be bonkers to assume that I didn't know, or that I would sincerely be asking about. There was this one time, a friend of mine basically baited this guy who would serially mansplain things into explaining how a lighter worked for like a good 30 minutes. No sense of irony at all. It's one of those things that's like, oh, dang, I totally know what you're talking about. We got a caller on the line. Tim, you want to weigh in here?
Is that me?
Yeah, hi. How's it going?
Hi, are you talking to me?
Are you Tim or are you Harry?
No, I'm Tim.
All right, let's hear it, Tim. How's it going?
Oh, good. How are you?
When
I first called, you guys were talking about what kind of world would an equitable world be. And that's what I had called up originally. Would you mind if I commented on that?
Go for it.
Okay. So, I've studied social change and worked in social change all my life in many facets. I've come to believe that if you want to establish real social change, a new culture, worldwide or otherwise, there's many different aspects that have to be worked on simultaneously. So I've got some ideas that I think work together, and they're not perfect. They need to be worked on. These are just off my head what I've accumulated. So what I...
And that might be the end of Tim there. I'm not totally sure.
Like that cut off. We'll try
to get that
fixed, and we can... Is Tim back there, or are we going to Harry?
I think we'll maybe circle over to Harry talking about terms. Harry, are you there?
Hi, this is Harry. How you doing? Here's the question. Well, I'm blind, so I always hear the word hashtag. And what is a hashtag? Is it a symbol?
Oh,
thank you, Harry.
That's a great point, Harry. The hashtag is actually the pound symbol. And again, that doesn't necessarily have too much weight in its own right. But the hashtag is sort of how the pound symbol, so like two lines going horizontally being crossed by two lines vertically, has been repurposed in social media to basically be sort of like a keyword that's searchable because it has that symbol at the beginning. So there are a lot of, this is a good thing to bring up, terms that have, you know, come into popularity because they can become a hashtag, so that they become something that is its own phenomenon and that people can create content and group it under that same idea. So if you were looking for a hashtag, I don't know, a hashtag Karen, you could find a whole bunch of those things. It just means that it is a keyword that is like searchable on a given social media site. Does that adequately explain it, do you think?
Okay. On a keyboard, on the numbers, usually there's a symbol on top of it. Is hashtag on one of them? Like, you know,
the hashtag is over the.
It's on number three.
The number three.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, great.
Mm-hmm.
One last thing I heard on the news that Biden okayed to fly the LGBTQ flag above the below the American flag on all embassies. Did you hear about that?
I didn't, but that's welcome news.
That's great. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Okay, thank you very much. Have a nice day.
Thanks, Harry.
Care,
have
Harry.
A good one.
Well, that was a nice addition.
Yeah. I'm honestly surprised at how succinctly I was able to describe a hashtag. I'm kind of proud of myself.
Yes, and just a side note, just because not to mansplain or anything, but
you couldn't
the hashtag... The hashtag character, the pound sign, as actually used in some coding, I think C++ or C++, I always forget, when describing something. So it's actually as a way of like the computer learning from whenever we hashtag things. So it's not just profile. It's not like arbitrary. There's a reason why there is a hashtag, and it's usually related to computer learning. So that's an interesting little tidbit.
They've also like become jokes and kind of like taken on a life of sort of like sarcastically hashtagging things as well. What
hashtag
were you
gonna blessed,
say?
Of course.
Hashtag blessed.
Hashtag
humble brag.
For our last few minutes, if listeners would like to chime in on different words that have been created or, you know, reignited that are letting you describe things that you didn't have the words to describe beforehand. 503-231-8187 is the phone number. Nalcia, I think we were talking, all right, catfish. Also another word that we did not have before, or at least not how we have it now, and it's just with the, you know, with the progression and evolution of time and culture, and then, you know, technology happens, right? And then technology happens to people, but then people happen to technology, and I think that's kind of where we're at, where that passageway right now. Mm-hmm. And catfishing is real; it is very real. Also, hatfishing, which is the equivalent of people who wear hats all the time to hide the fact that they don't have hair on their heads, which is perfectly fine. But I guess some folks are insecure about it. So there is also hat fishing.
Hat fishing. That's funny. Continue.
And there's all of these things that are related with like dating apps that also have their own jerkin almost. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like a one that I can think of from like the inception of my time on the internet is A/S/L, which, like that is, It doesn't. We don't have that anymore. We have other ways of realizing that question without even having to ask it. Trying to think of some more words that have entered the vocabulary.
I mentioned it just a second ago, but I just remembered humble brag. I think that one's pretty funny too, because that's one of those ones. That's like, oh, totally. I've totally heard somebody do that. It's where, you know, somebody says something, and this especially happens on like social media, or people who feel like they have this like public facing platform, right, where they're like, oh yeah, I did this thing and kind of this other thing, where it's not framed necessarily as bragging about, you know, wealth or, you know, experiences or their cool job or the new shoes they just bought, but it's sort of this or even like flex culture. I feel like flex is another like kind of good term. It's definitely become more prevalent now, of like, I'm showing you my wealth, but I'm not acknowledging that that's what I'm doing. I'm so down to earth, but I'm also like a millionaire off of social media.
Which makes me think of another word that is not too recent but pretty recent: gaslighting.
Oh yeah, gaslight was one that I was like, oh, another one that totally clicked. I think it's been a little bit bastardized as of late, in terms of just used, because it specifically like refers to somebody who is basically trying to like rewrite history and change your memory of something, basically make you question your own memory. And it's based off of a play, I believe, but it's kind of been broadly used to just explain, you know, abusive behavior, especially in like, you know, romantic relationships, or, you know, sometimes your boss or something like that. Anywhere there's a room for abuse, people will bring up gaslighting. And it's a pretty crummy thing to do, I would say, gaslighting.
Well, I think we get into, and there we see how a lot of these words undergo this kind of inflation and a kind of or dilution of their meanings. Like they start to be used in a way that's just progressively less and less confined to its original meaning. And so then the meaning becomes more and more broad and used more and more broadly. And then it's just like, it's not
like the word woke.
Yeah, or, you know, with gaslighting, it's meant to be a very specific kind of mental and emotional abuse where you're undermining, where that it's about undermining someone's sense of reality. You know, it's not just saying, oh, it didn't happen. No, that's not how it happened. It's saying you're crazy for thinking that's how it happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
It's not just saying, I didn't do that. It's saying you're crazy for thinking I did that.
Yeah, what's wrong with you that that's what you remember? Factoring in a level of self-doubt. If that's happening to you, research it, maybe look it up, because that's as Sonia mentioned, mental and emotional abuse. We are coming up on the end of our time with you today, unfortunately. Thank you so much for listening, really appreciate it. I'm Althea, Tammy's here too, Sonia's in the studio. I wanted to mention briefly, you know, language is flexible, it changes all the time, and if you try to, you know, put a chokehold on it, you end up like the French government and you borrow words from, you know, American slang English anyway. Any other final thoughts from you too? Sorry, I
thank
just
you
wanted
Althea.
To throw that out there.
Yeah, giving us some things to think about, some gems. Yeah, thank you all so much for tuning in. And yeah, have a great, fantastic weekend. Take care of yourselves, each other, you know, be well, be kind. Thank you all so much.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.